Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, we'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. Hi, my name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the... And we'd like to thank you for tuning in where we deal with boxing news, interviews, legend tales, in boxing history as we travel the globe looking for the past and the present and the future stars. We have our radio aficionado, Bob Murray. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, Aaron, hello. Hey, good to hear you. So, we got a nice show lined up. We have some news to get to and all that. And at the top of the game, you know, we talk a lot about people from Pottsville making it big and becoming, you know, just well-known stars. And we have to give it up this week to the woman who is the head coach of the NCAA Women's Championship, Notre Dame Lady Irish, man. What a tournament they had. They knocked off, you know, with that same girl making both shots, to knocking off Connecticut in overtime on a buzzer beater and then beating Mississippi State on a buzzer beater. And we just want to give it up to Muffet McGraw, who was born in Pottsville, man. So there's something. That's her second title. She's been coaching since 87. And, you know, way back in the days in the 90s in the radio station days, our old colleague who passed away, John Flanagan, actually interviewed her one time at the radio station here in Pottsville. So just again, congratulations to a great job, too. And a great coach she is, too. So wanted to pass that along. Plus, just something else we always talk about, the pros that came out of here. Well, just want to pass along that Carl Scheib, he was 91 years old. He was from Gratz. He passed away March 24th. And Gratz is just outside Schuylkill County line out there in the farmlands. And he actually played back in the day for Connie Mack and the Philadelphia A's. He was 16 years old when he became a pro, the youngest player ever in the American League playing for the old Philadelphia A's. So there you go, a couple of names from Schuylkill County history there. Just to let you know, it's still happening. From way back when to the current day.
Well, Schuylkill County is a sports mecca. You're not going to find too many sports that a legend hasn't been from Schuylkill County or Pottsville, you know. But yeah, man, Pottsville and Schuylkill County produce some great sports talent, and I'm part of that, and I'm happy to be a part of that. You know, when I was in junior high school, I was on championship teams since I was a kid. And a gentleman that I pitched and catch for, because I played baseball too, was the Hopkins. He played for one of the Texas
Rangers, I think.
Yeah,
Texas Rangers, I think. Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah. So we got great history. I'm Pots. I'm happy to be a part of that. But yeah, but further ado, look, again, we want to send our deepest heart feelings to Tony Trim and his family. He lost a grandchild through marriage. Now, listen to this story, Bob, as you well know, is that we want our guests to know that his grandson, they were traveling somewhere, and he's just getting out of the military. He went on a few tours of duty and all that. He finds a new love of his life, and they only been together for 1 year, man. And they were in a tragic car accident, and his wife lost her life. So, you know, today Tony's supposed to be on the show, but, man, we want to send our deepest prayers and blessings in the time of need. You know, they're young, they're, you know, just getting married. And, you know, when things like this happen, man, your heart just breaks for them, you know, with the story of his life and things. It looked like they were so happy. Now this happens. But, Tony, we'd say just stay strong, and we send our prayers and blessings out to you. But on another note, Henry Hascup is back from vacation, and he's going to be back next week talking about the New York State Boxing Hall of Fame and going in there and what all of that's about. And we look forward to him coming back on the show, Bob, because he was on vacation for a couple weeks. But we have somebody new that's going to be a part of the show over in England. Talk about him, Bob.
Yes, we have a guy who has been listening to our show. His name is Michelangelo Serra. He's going to be joining us, I guess, next week. And he's also going to – he's a writer over there, too, so I believe we're going to incorporate some of his talents there on our webpage, too, if I'm not mistaken. That's the plan. So well, we want to welcome him aboard. And, you know, we get a little bit of – this is the World Boxing Review, and, you know, we're going to have our voice in England. They're telling us a little bit more of the local scene right there on the ground, you know.
Yeah, you know, he's going to be writing all kind of things, you know, like legend tales with like Jack Johnson, Boxing Hall of Fame. He's going to be writing about, you know, boxing in general, what's going on. So I think the fans are going to love it. We love his enthusiasm, and he'll be on talking at least twice a month on our show. So, and with that, he has a very heavy brogue accent from England. So, you know, that keeps the things how we looking to expand because, you know, we have the heavyweights, Anthony Joshua over there, and our guests later. We're going to talk about all of that, what happened in the fight, our perspectives and all that. But, Bob.
I have some numbers for that, too. Yeah, we'll get to the numbers later. But, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, without further ado, man, what's happening around the world?
Tonight. Here we go. Hey, tonight's the big super welterweight world title fight at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. There is Landy Lara. He's 25-2-2, 14 wins by knockout, defending his IBO World and WBA Super World Junior Middleweight belts against the unbeaten IBF World Champ, Jared Hurd. He's 21-0, 15 wins by KO. And the undercard features a great matchup, too. Caleb Truax, he's 29-3-2, 18 wins by knockout, defending his IBF World Super Middleweight title against the challenger, James DeGale, 23-2-1, 14 by KO. And the Julian Williams, 24-1-1, 15 knockouts versus Nathaniel Gallimore, 21-1, 17 knockouts. Super welterweight tilt is also on that card. At the Eastern Michigan Convocation Center in Ypsilanti, Michigan, a couple of vacant titles up for the taking with the American Boxing Federation USA Mid-American Welterweight title fight between Leonardo Tyner, 32-12-2, and Andre Bird, 6-3-1, headlining. Also, the vacant ABF USA Mid-American Light Heavyweight title goes to the winner of the James Bullard, 9-1, versus Britton Norwood, 6-2-1 fight. Other spots across the U.S. with boxing events tonight include the super featherweight matchup between unbeaten Tyler McCreary, 14-0, and Gustavo Molina, 25-18, in Rising Sun, Indiana. And the super middleweight class between Rodolfo Gomez Jr., 12-4-1, and Ricardo Mayorga, 32-10-1, in Laredo, Texas. Garden City, Kansas hosts a card featuring the Eric Vargas, George Roybal super featherweight tilt. Sarasota, Florida's Municipal Auditorium hosts an 8-fight card highlighted by the Adrian Perez. He's 11-6-1 versus Tommy Bryan, who's 3-15-3. It's a lightweight matchup. The Chris Trietti, 25-4, James Morrow, 12-22-3, cruiserweight bout highlights a big 11-bout night in Derry, New Hampshire. And out west in San Francisco, Kareem Mayfield, 10-24-1, steps in with Gaku Takahashi, 16-8-1, in a welterweight feature. Up in Quebec City, Canada, is the site for the super lightweight matchup between undefeated Matthew Germain, 13-0, 7 KOs, and veteran Miguel Zamudio, 40-10-1. Undefeated heavyweight Simon Keane, check out this name. We're going to be talking about him down the road, I can see. This is what we do. We try to find some of these young up-and-coming fighters. He's 13-0, 12 wins by knockout. They call him the Grizzly. He takes on Ignacio Esparza, 21-2. Down in Ixtapa, Mexico, Johnny Gonzalez, 65-10, defends his WBC Latino super featherweight title against challenger Marilyn Cabrera, 24-1. Salamanca hosts a card featuring a lightweight battle between Luis Jan Revilla and Rafael Falcon Estrella. While out west in Tijuana, it's Jorge Edgar Silas, 11-29-2 versus Jesus Delgado, who's 12-1-1 as a super lightweight headliner. The vacant WBO Latino minimum weight title will be decided Tonight it's San Juan, Puerto Rico, with Yaniel Rivera, 16-2-3, 10 wins by KO, facing off with Elwin Soto, 7 wins, 1 loss, 5 wins by KO. Going down to South America, Cordoba, Argentina, is the hometown for Jose Matias Romero. He's 17-0, and he will defend his interim WBC Latino super featherweight title against Jesus Cuadro, who's 14-2. And the vacant WBO Latino super welterweight title is to be decided in Sao Paulo, Brazil, where Patrick Teixeira, he's 27-1, 22 wins by KO, squares up with Davi Elias Cavici, 14-4-1. Also, the vacant Brazilian female featherweight title is to be decided between the 15-11 Simone Aparecida da Silva and Tania Cardoso. And in Santiago, Chile, is Christian Salas, 8-1, versus Giacomani Hurtado, 12-7-1, as the feature. While Eduardo Soto debuts against Enzo Cariano in a super welterweight matchup at the top of the card in Puerto Montt, Chile. And then we go over to Scotland, heading over there. We find ourselves seeing a great matchup between super middleweights Tommy Philbin. He's 10-0, stepping in with Anthony Fox as the main event. Middleweight's Josh Groombridge, 6-0, 4 KOs, takes on Emmanuel Mostinga at King's Hall in Stoke-on-Kent, UK. While the venue in Dudley hosts the Stuart Davies versus Chris Attaway welterweight contest. In every vial of Wales, unbeaten super middleweight Mitch Buckland, 12-0, clashes with Robert Stasinski. And in Nova Arena in Wiener Neustadt, Austria, the headline is the battle for the vacant WBC World Female Bantamweight title between the 22-5 Eva Boraberger and the 12-1 Nina Radovanovic. Also on the card, the vacant IBF East-West Europe Super Middleweight title fight will see Tony Kraft, 13-0-1, meet Vasilij Sabaryaya, who's 13-7-1. Vienna will see two unbeatens go at it. Cruiserweight, Jervell Pulev, he's 9-0, taking on Laszlo Penzis, who's 7-0. Mikhail Dufek, 23-16-2, versus Peter Gina in a lightweight feature in Dobrich, Czech Republic. Wuppertal, Germany is where the vacant WBF International Super Welterweight crown will be decided between Marco Martini, 14-3, 6 KOs, Yasir Yüksel, he's 5-0, 3 wins by KO. Heidelberg will host the battle for the vacant GBC Intercontinental Middleweight title, which pits Denny Lehman versus Chris Herrmann. Rome, Italy will see Pietro Rossetti make his debut against Nikola Ivkovic. And heavyweight Vladimir Rusnak debuts against Vlasidas Lizak, who's 5-30 in the headliner in Nové Zámky, Slovakia. Uster, Switzerland will feature unbeaten light heavyweight David Ferracci, 7-0, taking on Emmanuel Frizu, 10-5-2. In Terrassa, Catalunya, Spain, is the light heavyweight battle between Mustafa Shadilui, 11-3-2, and Zura Rakerdashvili, who's 22-16, as the topper there. Over in Picanha, Spain, it's Ortiz Pardal, 11 wins, 2 losses, 1 draw, versus Dato Narava, who's 8-7. That's a super bantamweight event. Up in Norrköping, Sweden, it's unbeaten light heavyweight Simon Engström, 4-0, stepping in with Andres Rudero, who's 5-6-1. The card also features up-and-coming female super lightweight Patricia Burkhalt. There's another one we want to watch, too. Super lightweight Patricia Burkhalt, 9-0, fighting Dora Tala, who's 2-2. In Paris, France, heavyweight Tony Yoka, 3-0, battles Cyril Leonette, 13-9-2 for the main event. In Colnar, France, it's middleweight Vigen Gulnazarian, 11-0-3, and Constantine Sakala, 15-38-3, going at it. Rennes will feature the welterweight matchup of Baltour Gourisaye, 3-1, versus Vincent Galazzo, 2-4-1, while Haute-Garonne, France, hosts Alernic Batroposian, 3-2-2, versus Yves Mikael Tahadon. He's a rookie, he's 1-0. And that's the fight there. Rabat, Morocco, going down into the African continent now. The vacant UBO World Superweight title will be awarded to the winner of the Kali Hafshain, 7-2-1 versus Paata Varduashvili, 33-15-2 contest. Lagos, Nigeria, hosts the card that's topped with the middleweight matchup between Paul Valenzuela Jr., 21-7, and Aaron Coley, 15-1-1, as well as the battle for the vacant West African Boxing Union super welterweight belt, Itefan Okine, 13-14-1, and Sule Ogabade, who's 5-1. in Kinshasa in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Orlando Antonio Farias, 52 and 17, defends his UBO World's Cruiserweight title against challenger Manroy Siddiqui, who's 14-1 and 1. And Rocky Kaleng, 9-2, defends his Universal Boxing Organization World Heavyweight title against Nestor Fabian Insaurralde, who's 16-14 and 1. And a big night in the Pacific, starting with three title fights in Brisbane, Australia, topped by Dennis the Hurricane Hogan, 26-1-1, battling Jimmy Kilrain Kelly, who's 23-1, for the WBO Intercontinental Super Welterweight and WBO Oriental Super Welterweight titles. Also, Damian Hooper, 13-1, defends his WBO International Light Heavyweight title against Reynald Quinlan, who's 12-2. While both Jai Apataye, 14-0, 11 by KOs, and Lucas Peskowski, 9-1, seek the vacant WBO Asia-Pacific Cruiserweight title. Takanori Ohashi, he's 15-4-2, defends his Japanese featherweight title against Taiki Minamoto, 14-5, in the headliner in Tokyo, Japan. And Joe Nonne, 13-2-1, defends his WBO Asia-Pacific Youth Super Featherweight title in a co-feature against Hector Garcia, who's 12-6-2, while Superfly Chris Alfonte, 13-6-1, takes on Roine Alpaio, 21-8, in the other feature, and that takes place in Bogo City, Philippines. And there's our look at the world, crossing through 22 countries, covering all the continents except Antarctica, which we'll get one day. We'll get a fight going down there. There you go.
Oh, my God. 22 countries, Bob. You stormed through that one. My God. Oh, man. Yeah. Take a little breath, Bob.
All right. There we go.
Man, you want to
give you a password? Yeah, we got some other news, man. I mean, that's all the fights. But I just want to point out, too, you know, we talked last week about Mikey Garcia. He was going to look at retain that IBF light welterweight title, but instead he's going back to 135 to defend the WBC lightweight title. So he's making up his mind. He's taking a WBC title. And now we're looking like Triple G. He might be going against Spike O'Sullivan. That's the latest news on that. And, you know, we got some other fight news too. And, you know, Manny Pacquiao looking like he's taking on Lucas Matisse on July 14th in Kuala Lumpur over in Malaysia. So, those things are all subject to change, but that's what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, things are vastly changing with Manny Pacquiao, Triple G with Canelo Alvarez and all of that. All that's vastly changing every day. But our up-and-coming
guests. Let's not forget that Horn and Crawford, too, you know.
Yeah.
Horn Crawford fight's still in the hall, too, you know, with the injury and all that.
With Horn, that, you know. So we're going to take a look at all of that. We're going to be talking about that in the heavyweight division with Anthony Joshua. Our guests are holding on the queue for a second. We'll be right with them shortly. But, yeah, there's so much changing. But the good news is, Bob, is that Anthony Joshua captured another title. That's the good news in the heavyweight division. The arena was a sellout, which is fine. What we had talked about, Bob, on our show was that it was going to be a good heavyweight fight. A young Parker, who's only 26 years old, you know, and he's a champion. So with our guests, these are the kind of perspectives that we're going to be talking about, okay, with that. But without further ado, Bob, we'd like to thank everyone for tuning into the World Boxing Review Radio Show. My name is Aaron Snow, and we got the radio aficionado, Bob Murray. And also online right now, I'm proud to say the Hall of Famer, Mustafa Amin. How you doing, good brother?
Oh, my God, Aaron, every time you say that, you know I get all excited because to the viewing, the listening audience as well, Aaron Snowell is being modest. I am so proud that Aaron Snowell and Mustafa Amin are both being inducted together simultaneously in the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame. So congratulations, Hall of Famer.
No, No, good. No, congratulations to you, man. We're longtime friends. You know, we talk about Schuylkill County, Bob. Mustafa Amin was up in Schuylkill County at Muhammad Ali's training camp, and that was our roots right there. And from there, we talk. And if Ali was here today, he would be so proud, you know, to see these things unfold, you know, where you plant seeds, you see it take roots, you see them grow, and then you see the flowers bloom and all of that. And all that's a part of things that were implanted by a legend and a great man, Muhammad Ali. And thank you and congratulations, Mustafa Amin, your hard work and the commitment to the sport of boxing. But we have another guest, too, that's hanging on in the queue, Shahid Saluka. Now, I get your name twisted up. Welcome to the show, because I have a nephew named Shahid. So, you know, welcome to the show. How you doing, brother?
Thank you, my brother. I'm doing great. And it's pronounced Shahid Saluki. So, yeah, but
Saluki.
I get that all
okay.
the time. Right, right, my brother. But it's a pleasure being on the show. I'm very grateful and humble to be on the show with you, brothers. You know, Mustafa and yourself, man, it's a humbling experience.
Well, brother, you're a great trainer in your own right. You know, to train Layman Brewster, who's going to be on the show tomorrow. You know, he said he couldn't make it today, but we're going to do a special with him tomorrow. We are, and we want to say, man, congratulate you, but. You know, Anthony Johnson and them that they beat Klitschko, but you trained him to beat him too, in a grand knockout fashion. So that was no easy task.
No, it wasn't. And at the time that we beat him, it was a young Klitschko. It was supposed to be in the best of the Klitschko. You know, not taking anything away from Anthony, but Anthony Klitschko was much older and was on the downside. When we beat him, he was actually on the upside. And at the time we beat him, you know, we beat him when both brothers was working on making history. And it was supposed to start with Vladimir beating Layman. And 2 weeks later, his brother was supposed to fight Corey Sanders and win the heavyweight championship. At that time, then there would have been two brothers. That would have been the first time two brothers went in the heavyweight championship together or being champion together. But we stopped him.
Well, if you guys don't mind, I'd like to take a moment to add a backstory to that. And knowing Shahid and his personality and his modesty, he wouldn't say what I'm getting ready to say. But the backstory of that is that as a trainer that evening, he went against the great Emmanuel Stewart in a championship fight, and Emmanuel had been brought in to revitalize Vladimir's career. You know, he got stopped, and there was questions about his chin. So they brought the great Emmanuel Stewart in to fix things. And he had the misfortune of going against this unknown trainer, relatively unknown, of course, Shahid Saluki. So Shahid Saluki, not only did Layman won, but Shahid beat the great Emmanuel Stewart, and to me, that is a tremendous backstory.
Yeah, well, that's a hard task to do, because what a great thinking trainer he is. You know, when you go up against them, fighters are going to be well prepared mentally and physically. That's what happens on a high level with good trainers. You know, we're not going to go into bouts with our fighter not being prepared to win. Now, sometimes there's other circumstances that happen that's far out of our reach. But most of the time, I say 90% of the time, bro, when you go up against guys like Emmanuel Stewart, Angelo Dundee, and those things, their fighters are well prepared mentally and physically, and that's what creates a champion. And without, you know, getting things twisted up or anything like that. Look, with Matthew Saad Muhammad, Mustafa, you were with him for a long time, that long range, and the way he fought and the way he was prepared, you know, it shows what that are up on this level, what they can do. And from that loss, Emanuel Stewart regrouped himself, and he made a run with Klitschko that was second to none. But that's what good trainers are able to do, regroup themselves and make that run, and that's what Emanuel did. Mustafa, you were there in those training camps with Klitschko when Emanuel redone things to take him on that journey as being one of the great heavyweight champions of the world. Explain that a little bit.
Well, I have to say that one of the, as we now begin to look back on some of the, you know, things that we did, Aaron and Shadid, one of my greatest joys is looking back on the last few years of Emanuel Stewart's life and the time that we spent for about 3 to 4 years in the Klitschko camps. Over, we would train over in Europe, in Austria, in the mountains, and with Vitaly and Latimer. And, you know, I spent a lot of time. Of course, no one anticipated that Emanuel would get sick and die so suddenly. You know, it wasn't like a long illness, but yeah, we spent weeks together, as you guys know. Training camps are literally weeks at a time, so we spent time training in the middle of nowhere in Austria in the mountains with nothing else to do but to train and talk boxing. And so that is one of the highlights of me looking back, you know, in addition to Muhammad Ali and Matthew Saad Muhammad, you know, definitely, you know, the times, those past years that I spent with Emanuel Stewart in Europe, not to mention being in Europe by itself with us guys being who we are, raised in, you know, not environments that enabled us to travel when we were kids. So boxing opened up the world, and being there with Emanuel was just priceless. I mean, I can go on and on and on about stories and everything else, but we have a limited time on the show, and I'm sharing the show with everyone else, so we'll talk about some of that other stuff in the future.
Okay. Just hold your point, but Shahid, you have been over in Europe yourself training some of the European heavyweights. Can you talk about your experience over in Europe yourself and what you've seen while you were over there? Training some of the heavyweights and stuff that over there.
Well, I actually, when I was there, you know, I've worked with a lot of Russian fighters. I had Audley Harrison from London, which who fought David Hay, and I spent some time in London with Audley and Eddie Hearns, and you know, so. But man, I love Europe, you know, especially London. Great experience, you know. I would advise people to go, to make that journey.
No, yeah, absolutely. You know, Tim Witherspoon, we took him over there when he filled up Wembley Stadium when he knocked out Frank Bruno. Tim Austin, the Cincinnati kid, defended his title in England. We were over there many, many times with Frank Warren and co-promotions with Don King. So I spent a lot of time over there. I trained some fighters from over there, Zuma Nelson, and a bunch of guys when he fought over there. So, you know, we know the European market. I've trained guys from Russia, from Kiev, where the Klitschkos are from. I trained a bunch of those guys. You know, I work with a lot of guys myself from over there. Being Anthony Joshua, the reason why I'm bringing this up is Anthony Joshua has now captured the boxing world by a great performance from a nice-looking heavyweight. You know, he speaks well. He has the look. He carries himself well. He knows what to say and things. And, you know, Mr. Hearns is doing a very, very good job bringing him along. But
I agree.
What is your perspective from his last fight with Parker. I'll go with you first, Shadid, and then we'll bring Mustafa in.
Sure. Actually, watching the fight, I expected more out of Joshua because, you know, I think very highly of him. But Parker was able to create some problems for him that showed that he needs to go back to the basic fundamentals, what to do, when to do it, how to do it. And he was got a little frustrated with Parker, with the movement. Parker was a big man that some fought like a little man somewhat, and it created a problem for Joshua. And, you know, I've always mm-hmm. said that the one that's going to beat Joshua is a big man that fights like a little man, you know, and mm-hmm. they make the adjustments with him because he's big, he's strong. He reminds me of somewhat of a Sonny Liston, you know, somewhat of a George Foreman because he's big, he's strong, you know,
yeah.
Pretty decent speed. But what I saw in that fight, it was a little of the basic fundamentals, you know, how to get
okay.
to a man, how to really
right.
establish
well,
your jab.
Hold that point. Mustafa, what was your view?
Well, you know, I have a different perspective, and it's like, you know, sometimes like a diamond, you know. You can look at a diamond, and it reflects differently depending on what you're looking at. So my perspective is this. I actually I enjoyed the fight. As you guys, and you guys are trainers, so you know even more than I, the objective in any fight is to win. That's your number one objective.
Absolutely.
apart from fighter safety. Fighter safety is always number one. But your objective is
yeah.
to win. So what we say in boxing, Saad Muhammad, Muhammad Ali, sometimes you show up and everything's not clicking that particular night for various reasons. It could be the opponent, et cetera, et cetera. But the philosophy is this, very simple. Let's win tonight when you realize second, third round that the guy's not going to be stopped. He's not going anywhere. We're in for a long night. Let's win. Here's the saying, let's win and look pretty next time. So what I like about that fight is that Joshua, he had knocked out every opponent. It became apparent that this guy was not going to be knocked out. He did enough to win the fight, and he also checked off a box for all of us. Does this guy have the stamina to go into championship rounds without passing out, fainting, et cetera, et cetera? His stamina was excellent. So I saw enough that encouraged me. I agree with Shadid that, yes, we can look at some technical things that can be worked on, blah, blah, blah. I also suggest that what's-his-name is underrated. Parker, to me, showed some skill sets at age 26 that he's young enough that I think he could end up being a threat or a future champion as well. So the opponent was not just Tom, Dick, and Harry. He fought a good young heavyweight, not a great heavyweight, but a good heavyweight. So I was encouraged that the future of the heavyweight division, or not the future, the current state of the heavyweight division is pretty good. So that's my take.
You hold that thought. Hold that thought, Mustafa. Here's my view. We thought, myself and Bob Murray, when we were discussing, you know, we had seen Parker fight many times coming up from over in Australia. He's a very active fighter. He throws a lot of punches and things like that when he's coming forward. He's a machine, and he works. However, what we witnessed in the fight is that Anthony Joshua took control of the center of the ring. Okay? He forced Parker to do something that he don't normally do, and that's back up or try to box. So when he took that away from him, and we failed to mention about the referee, I thought times the referee took away the flow of the fight. He wouldn't let neither one of them fight on the inside. Sometimes guys have to get inside, find a way to clinch and punch on the inside to they find a way that they can box or move. And no sooner Parker got on the inside, the referee was breaking his flow. A few times, Anthony Joshua tried to fight on the inside with an uppercut, and darn near took the referee's head off from getting in the way. You know what I mean? And they kept looking at him, and it took away really the flow of the fight. But I think it came a time the young heavyweight put in his mind that he wasn't going to get knocked out. And you ever see a sparring session where a guy's just in there just to say, champ, you ain't going to hurt me, and nor are you going to knock me out. All right, I don't have it this day, but you ain't knocking me out. And I thought it was times it came like that. And talking about fundamentals, Shahid, less fundamentals what I thought. When a guy missed a guy with a right hand, hand and he's riding and he's going over to that left, ducking his head to the floor, the uppercut or left uppercut should come up somewhere. You know what I mean?
Right,
to
I
bring
agree.
The guy straight back up. Now, that's what you're talking about. Is that right, Shahid? The fundamentals.
That's what
part
I'm talking about. Also, let's take George, for instance, Big George. Big George cut off the ring very good, and you couldn't get away from George. George knew how to get
right.
to you, and with his feet, you know, his foundation was really good, better than a lot of people gave him credit for, you know, and that's
mm-hmm.
what, to me, I saw was lacking with Joshua. You know, he was jabbing a lot, but he was falling short, where then if you fall in short, then your feet takes you there, and you have to know how to get there.
Yeah, but I looked at something and during that fight, is that Anthony Joshua is a rhythm fighter, and they're trying to make him take his rhythm away from him. You know, he got a lot of talent, man. He's young, big, strong, but I seen him go in and out one time to try to find his rhythm. He went in, he had that rhythm, that in and out rhythm to him. And I think as a young fighter with him, I'd get him to work more off that rhythm where his punches can flow. Now, there was a gentleman also that y'all know very well who's a great trainer in his own right, Bashir. Bashir was with them, and he was in the Klitschko camp with y'all. Ain't that right,
James Ali Bashir. Yeah, James Ali Bashir, assistant trainer with Emmanuel Stewart for over 12 years, assistant trainer to Vladimir Klitschko, and I have to tell you that Vladimir, he always wanted to, during the last few years of Manny's life, we had some of the top heavyweights that would be sparring partners in the camp. So when Anthony AJ won the Olympics in London in 2012, Vladimir brought him into the training camp. And I didn't go to the training camp. Bashir was calling me on a daily basis, move. This guy, AJ, I like him a lot. He appears to be the real deal. You know, he likes his fundamentals, you know, his mannerism, quest for learning, his ability to listen to instructions. And he would just call me. He said, and this is before AJ began to open up his professional career, that from the very beginning, Bashir thought that AJ could be the heir apparent to the heavyweight crown. And so apparently Bashir has been right. Is he a finished product, as Shahid is pointing out? Are there some flaws? Are there some things that can be improved? I will agree wholeheartedly with Shahid. The answer is yes. But I think there's enough that me personally, I like what I see. And I still like Parker, but I like what I see in this AJ.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Also,
you know, this one makes
Aaron,
a great matchup. Yes.
Let's go back to when you were saying that he's a rhythm fighter. Actually, that's pretty much what I was saying with his feet. You know, so if you're a rhythmic fighter, it starts with your feet. And then you know, the foundation starts from the ground, then comes up. In order to get him going, it starts with his feet. And what I saw in that fight, his feet wasn't taking him there. He didn't know how to slide up. He didn't know how to gauge his distance. His distance was off. If he had really conquered his distance, I don't think Parker would have made the 12 rounds.
Yeah,
you know,
and you're absolutely right. And you know, as a trainer, as you well know, we're always looking at each little edge. Now, I've seen some videos of Anthony Joshua training, hitting a heavy bag, and even sparring. And I watch certain things. You know, we're creatures of habit, and practice makes perfection. I watch guys work the pads with guys, and they never move around the boxing ring. They're always standing in front of guys, letting them hit the pads and stuff like that. Or you see a guy hit a heavy bag. He never circles the heavy bag. He's always in one spot. And why am I saying this? Is because we're creatures of habit. You got to practice what you plan on doing in the ring when you're sparring and things like that.
I agree.
And I think this is what you're looking at yourself.
Right.
Uh-huh.
I agree. I just want to add to that, you know, the gym work. Every bag in the gym serves a different purpose. And like it's so true what you're saying. Some bags you work with power. Some bags you box. And even when you're in the mirror, shadow boxing. A lot of people don't understand that. When they say shadow boxing, when you're in the mirror, you're critiquing yourself. You're actually looking at how you hold your hands, or when you jab, or if you're dropping it when you bring it back, or if you're dropping the right hand when you jab, when you throw the hook, the position of your right hand. A lot of fighters today get in front of a mirror, and they actually just look at themselves. They don't look at critique their fundamentals. Even when you get in the ring and shadow box, when you shadow box in the ring, I see a lot of people, fighters get in the ring today, and I watch, they're just loosening up. But actually, you have an imaginary opponent in front of you, and you're actually fighting. You're actually going through the motion as if you had a man in front of you. I don't see that.
And you know what else I watched? I watched, too? Anthony Joshua has a lot of rhythm and but sometimes his left hand goes down and he's not practicing how to throw different style jabs. You know, if you're going to carry your left hand down, you have to learn how to throw your jab because from that position. As long as your right hand's up, you can defense a shot, ride a shot. He's only throwing one style of jab. And that one style of jab, Parker almost caught him with it, with the overhand right. He's throwing it and throwing the same style of jab without using different style of jabs. He got a great jab now, but if you change the different style of jabs you throw at a guy, it makes the right hand that you plan that 1-2, which is the hardest punch in boxing to get away from, you know, because it comes straight down the line. If you throw different style of jabs at a guy, you set him up to deliver that right hand. And if you notice, he kept missing because the guy was riding the shot, the right hand. But if you throw a different style of jab, an up jab or something where he's going at anyway, you're going to run him right into your right hand. And he never changed the style of jab he was throwing at.
I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because today fighters really don't understand an up jab or a different jab.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, they have one jab, but they really don't know how to use an up jab. Right. You're absolutely right.
Each kind of jab serves a purpose of what you're trying to set a guy up for. Sometimes you throw a bait jab. You throw it lightly outward, don't really have nothing to make a guy throw a counter so you can counter him back. You know,
these fighters
with good boxers can do. Yeah, you bait him.
You make him think that you can punch with the jab. Ali had one of the best jabs ever, and he used to do that.
Yeah.
He used to hit you with a light jab and then run you into a sledgehammer jab.
You got that right. But before we get into the other guys' names in the heavyweight division, our radio aficionado, Bob, do you have any questions?
Hey, first of all, I just want to say this is fascinating listening to you gentlemen, man. I'm just sitting back and just loving the analysis of it all. But, hey, there's my point I wanted to bring up. Parker, okay, he's New Zealand, Joshua from the U.K., and, it did not play well on Showtime over the weekend. The highest total was 483,000. That was on the replay, which came on about 10 o'clock Eastern time because of the fight with the difference in time. The original live showing was 379,000. And we compare that to Wilder, who drew 1.2 million just earlier in the month, too. So, we're looking at anything like Joshua and Wilder. It's got to be here in the United States just for the sake of the money that's going to be on the table there.
I disagree
with you, Bob.
I disagree with that as well.
Bob, I have a different analysis with all due respect. I spent a lot of time in Germany and Europe, and Bashir and I, James Ali Bashir, the trainer with Klitschko and Emmanuel, we marveled from, I'm going back from 2010 moving forward, and at the time Germany was a hotbed of boxing. And Bob, with all due respect, we go out to these shows, and I went to the Klitschko fights. Bob, we're talking 55, 60, 63,000 at all of the fights. When Latimer fought David Haye, it was the most insane scene I ever saw at a press conference. 15,000 Brits flew over from London, from all over England, to attend a press conference. So now London has conceded the hotbed of boxing, the capital, believe it or not, is not the Barclays Center. It's not the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. We're talking England. They're packing in, this kid's packing in 90,000 people, 80,000, upward numbers. They don't need Showtime. We're so accustomed to looking at what Showtime and HBO does. This guy is putting asses in the seats. Floyd Mayweather himself never fought in front of more than 20,000 people in Las Vegas. So the numbers are there. They're just not, quote, the American numbers. But this kid Joshua never has to leave England except to appease the American audience. And that's something they can choose to do. But until Wilder starts putting asses in the seats, like at the Barclay, he can't sell the Barclay out. He fights
but
in Alabama.
Here's what we're taking a look at.
Okay.
It was a hot fight. Showtime only paid for the rights to air the replay. It's different from being live, okay, than a replay. Because the replay numbers go down because people hear the news. You have to realize that we're in an age of massive market media. When people hear of a great fight and it happened, all right, that live TV audience, people go to the internet. They go to the news. They can watch the fight again over on the internet. So when Showtime plays it a week later or a delayed broadcast, people already got the news.
Already watched.
Aaron, the fight was shown live in real time. Last week at 5
yeah,
o'clock,
was, yeah.
which was 11 o'clock in
okay,
London.
Yeah.
The fight
yeah. They hit the numbers. They had 379,000.
Yeah.
They peaked out at the live event, and then 483. So the numbers actually went up for the replay.
Yes. That's correct, Bob.
Okay. So, you have this here, back and forth. you know, with this multimedia stuff that's out there, you know, with a nanoseconds, man, a push of a button, news gets around the world, okay, for the upper end. That's why Mayweather and them, he does so great, is because the younger crowd likes Mayweather because all of the antics with money that he does. You know what I mean? And them guys are really on the gadgets. And I think both of them, this Wilder fight, if I was Hearns, I wouldn't bring Anthony Joshua over to America to fight. What I would do would use a marketing tool in the United States to bring Anthony Joshua and put him on the talk show market, like they used to take American fighters like Muhammad Ali and put him on the talk circuit in England. You know, if they bring Anthony Joshua over here and put him on a marketing tour, them late night shows, them early morning talk shows and all that, show pictures and who he is, what he's all about, he's going to take off like a rocket in America without even fighting. You know what I mean? Dante Wilder's a different bit.
America is not that important anymore in terms of viewing. When you have 90,000 people attending your shows, 90,000 people, you tell me, other than a little bit more to the pot, that brings to AJ. I don't know exactly what the numbers are in terms of what he made, but you tell me how we're going to add to that by fighting anywhere in America.
He got 23 million pounds.
Yeah.
Parker got 13 million pounds. So it's a lot of money, without a question. And I believe this is what I was saying about.
Yeah, but when you're a pay-per-view fight, let's use the Mayweather example really quick. When you're a pay-per-view fighter, it doesn't matter where you fight because the pay-per-view numbers truly what generates the income and the revenue for a fight. So the gate becomes a small portion of the revenue. So if I'm managing AJ, it's really not crucial that we fight in America, except I do agree with you, some type of campaign or some type of way to make him more aware, fight fans aware of who he is, so that you get the grandmothers, you get the uncles, you get non-boxing people talking about you. That's where the Mayweather revenue came. It wasn't just the boxing community. So you're right, Aaron.
All right.
He has to become.
All right. Now hold that point. We're going to go down because we're running out of time here. This show's going so good. Time's going fast. All right. Tyson Fury, do you think either one of you, yes or no, that he should have an opportunity to fight Anthony Joshua?
If I can go first, I have a fighter, Gerald Washington. I would like to see Gerald Tyson Fury. but to come right and fight.
He did something to Dante Wilder. Explain that situation.
Right. Well, you know, I wasn't with him then, but, you know, Gerald was actually brought in on a short notice with limited experience. And he's a big man. He's strong. He's fast. Punches good. And he really was doing very well with Deontay. He got hit and got stopped. You know, he fought Big Baby. The two losses came from just really inexperience. So he's with me now. And I can honestly say that he's a different individual.
We're going to see a vast improvement. How about you, Tyson Fury, Mustafa? We got to come on because we got like 3 minutes or so into the show.
Real quickly, two fighters from England. It would be a tremendous fight in England. Whether or not he warrants an immediate fight with Joshua after the layoff, that's debatable. I'm not certain what the answer should be, but does Tyson Fury deserve a second chance like any other individual? I would say yes. If he's redeemed himself, the drug use is stopped, he gets in shape, blah, blah, blah. That's a fight that the fans deserve. Maybe not immediately, I don't know, but that's a fight that the fans deserve at some point. Two undefeated heavyweight champions, great.
Now,
I agree with you.
How about these mandatories? Because Anthony Joshua has all these tight about these mandatories that he's going to have to face. Do you feel that he should take care of these mandatories, or should he? Now's the time to fight Wilder. Well, how do you feel about that?
Well, the mandatory is really quick. In our day, the era that we started off in boxing, Shadid and Aaron and I imagine Bob,
we have a couple minutes.
Okay, yeah, really quick. I lost my train of thought. What was the question again, real quick?
The mandatory title defenses.
Oh, the mandatory. The mandatory. In our era, the fighters gave the fans what they wanted to see. You know, Hagler, Hearns, Ray Leonard, Hagler, and those are the fights, the Furies and the AJs and the Wilders. These are the fights that the fans want. I'm not certain about those men. The fighters fight who the fans think they should fight.
And these guys
Let's go back. Mandatories are important. If a fighter has earned his right and became the mandatory, I don't think that he should be bypassed if he's earned it.
Well, here you're right, Shahid, and here's what I think. They're making the kind of money is to have those mandatories. Now, you can pay a mandatory guy to wait. Now, they're making big cash. Pay them guys. It just keeps the going. Pay
but really quick,
I believe if they gave them $500,000 to sit to the side, hey, look, to make a huge mega fight with Wilder and Anthony Joshua, I think the hour and the times and now the boxing community needs it. They need to sign it. Is because all of them other guys are going to be lined up, bro. And this is for all the marbles. If I was Dante Wilder, you would have to fight like Anthony Joshua did to all of them belts, right? And you already got one. I'd rather fight one time to win all those belts and get all that money than have to fight all of them other guys less of time, get less of money, and get belts. You understand? That's why the hour and the time is now. He's not going to get another better opportunity.
Yeah, but keep in mind, unlike the old days.
I understand it. That's not like the old days, but there's a lot of politics. Let me tell you, Wilder's only fighting for $2 million a fight, and if he can fight for 20 million pounds or 22 million pounds against $2 million, what you going to do? And to win all three belts, that's a no-brainer. You either fight for a title, a championship, you either fight for prestige or position, or number three, you fight for money when all the models are on the line and all of that. We have 90 seconds closing, Shahid. What do you want to say?
Joshua is the man right now. Deontay, my brother, was saying, 90,000 people to 16,000 people, what you were saying about Joshua coming over here, I think Wilder needs to step up his game and put more people in the seats and become more popular.
Mustafa, you got 20 seconds.
Well, I like to see the fighters fight the fights that the fans want to see, and I'll leave it at that. Forget all of the politics. Make it happen. And that's my
That's statement. Right. Make it happen. Bob, your closing views.
There you go. We're running out of time, so just thank you, gentlemen, for being on. A very enjoyable show. And, we'll look forward to next week when we welcome our other new contributor, Michelangelo Saratusa. We're looking forward to next week, and thanks for a good show today.
Yeah, thank you. And Michelangelo, he's from England, so we have an England correspondent over there now. Hey, man, Shahid Mustafa, man, thank you, man. What a great show, man.
Thank you,
great
my brother.
Views, Shahid and Mustafa. Hey, couldn't have better guests to bring this about. With 10 seconds left, man, we like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. Next week, same time, from 11 to 12. Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.